Hello and welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast, presented by Adventure Media Group. I'm Patrick Gilbert, the executive director at Adventure Media, joined by Danielle Immerman, Adventure Media's content queen. We are usually joined by our founder and CEO, Isaac Radansky. He's a little tied up today. I made an excuse earlier in the week for a different program that beginning of the month is really just when Isaac has a fresh set of excuses for not showing up to things. It has nothing to do with anything related to accounting or bills or anything, but he wasn't able to make it. But we still want to cover some important topics on the podcast today. We love this because now we get to put the spotlight more on Danielle. So Danielle, how are you doing?
Doing well, Patrick. Things are going. Things are moving along. It's all you can ask for these days.
You've managed to make it into the office the last couple of days despite the snowstorm that dumped on New York City.
I have managed to plow through the polar vortex that is Long Island. And you know what? We can't complain because the office is a great place to be.
Wow. And you're even willing to put up with the Long Island Railroad for that. So that's certainly saying a lot. Danielle, today we want to talk about, I think the theme or the idea here is how to organize chaos and promote deep work. And this is something that I think you and I have random conversations about all the time. I think you and I are just kind of interested in this topic, as are a lot of other people that work with us. But we work in an agency which is pretty chaotic, and there's a million different things going on at any given moment. I want to get your thoughts right off the bat. Like, how do you focus and stay on track and prioritize and actually like get work done, which is a ridiculous question, but like, let's just make it, how do you get work done?
What a loaded question. You're first assuming that I get work done. So I think we have to backtrack there a little bit and ask ourselves, do I get work done? Which
you're probably the only person in the company that actually has work output that can be measured. Because like I can see podcasts going out, blog posts being put up, case studies being developed, newsletters going out. Whereas like we have 15 or 20 other people working here that like I have no idea what they're doing all day. Like, I don't know. So yeah, like you do actually
get that's true. But I will say on that note, because it is so apparent when you post something, that when I post something, it's very clear that I did something and I accomplished something. But I think it can be misleading because it's so easy for me to upload an Instagram post and say, oh, I accomplished something for today. I got something done. Like at the end of the day, like what is that post going to really get us in the long run? Like at the end of the day, it's just like a short-term Instagram post or it's just a short-term blog post. Like, is that really getting work done or is it just a busy task that like looks good and kind of seems like I'm doing work? When at the end of the day, that's not really like what I should be doing. There are more important things that I could be doing, but I'm just using that outcome, that clear outcome as a way to feel good and to get something done off my checklist. But I think circling back to how do I get work done and what do I do in the midst of chaos, I think it's a really interesting topic and something that I'm very passionate about. Like, I love structure, I love process, and I think you really need it in these kinds of settings. So I'm almost happy Isaac couldn't make it today because I feel like I now have the opportunity to get a lot of words in edgewise. But yeah, I'll turn it back to you because I think there's so much on this topic that we can really dive into. So let's get into it.
So you brought up some interesting things here. The note about, hey, is this actually worth my time? Is this really productive? Is a theme that we keep coming back to on this podcast. This goes back to the High Performance Habits episode, plural episodes, where we talked about how to measure prolific quality outputs. And just having that self-awareness and asking that question is like half the battle. That's really good. And I think that there's a balance between understanding that there's certain busy work that all of us will have to do on any given day, but trying to make room for the things that actually matter. The reality of it is we're never going to be in a situation where 100% of our work activity is optimal and with the right intention for the long-term outlook. we're going to get stuck doing things that are either not important in the grand scheme of things, or maybe lose the company money for one reason or another. Maybe it's like a, not a profitable venture, but we're pursuing it because we basically have to. And that's okay. As long as we recognize that and find room to do things for the long term. And look, this podcast is a perfect episode of that. It's a perfect example of that, because there's a million things that I could be doing right now, but I know that the podcast is important. Now, earlier today, when I decided to try and fix the sliding door in the conference room, as opposed to actually answering the emails in my inbox, that's kind of a separate conversation, because that's probably less important for the grand scheme of things. But I felt pretty good about myself when I actually was able to fix the sliding door. It's been annoying the living hell out of me. So as far as like being organized and focusing, I've been really looking into this topic over the last couple months. I think the COVID lockdowns has really gave me a new perspective on all of this, because I was so used to this chaotic environment. And then when that was taken away from me and I was basically in solitude working by myself, it was a whole different experience. And I learned a lot about focus and productivity and all these things that could be unlocked if you tap into that sort of environment. So I've read a couple of books recently that are on this topic that are really good. I recommend them, and they're relevant to the marketing space. One is called Noise by Joseph McCormick, and the other is Deep Work by Cal Newport. But honestly, like all this, like it's the sort of stuff that you read it and it's like, yeah, no, I just have bad habits. Like I just need to like stop like being so addicted to my phone. So it's a good use of time, or it's not, I don't know. But the main things that they tap into is how to unlock this concept of deep work, which is like, we've all experienced it, but we chase after it as if it's like a drug, where you're in the zone and hours go by, but you don't realize it. And it's sort of exciting. And then, you know, it finishes at one point and then you're like, oh my God, like look at how much I just accomplished. And that is just such an incredible feeling. And it's really how to achieve that mental state. And honestly, the main takeaway from both of these books is that multitasking is the dumbest thing that all of us do. And in fact, they don't like specifically say this, but my takeaway from this is that in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, this concept of multitasking has been a badge of honor. And it's really just a lazy excuse for overcompensating for bad habits, because we don't have the ability or the attention span to focus on one thing at a time. And that actually hurts us in the end. And there's a lot of science here that shows why it's ridiculous. On the topic of multitasking, like, do you feel that you're the kind of person that multitasks? And over the last couple of weeks, as we've been talking about this more, has your attitude toward this changed at all?
I think it's so interesting that you bring up multitasking, because I have noticed people in the office, like they seem to be very good at multitasking, and I look at them in admiration, which is funny because you're kind of making the point that maybe we should not be multitasking, that it's actually harming us at the end of the day. I'm the kind of person that cannot multitask. I have never been the kind of person, like if I am listening to a conversation, I'm listening to a conversation. I can't get work done. Like if I am doing work, then I can't listen to a conversation. It's very much like one or the other. And I can't do it point blank. There's nothing more that I can say on the topic, because it's just like mentally impossible for me to focus on two things at the same time.
And I don't know if it's a badge of honor or something that we feel that's necessary. And I think like collectively, like our generation has become competent at it. Like good is separate. Like if it's good, then it means that it's better than not multitasking. But I think that we're all competent at it. Like I remember my first job where I walked into the office and I had two different monitors. And that was like a whole different, it was like, oh my God, I can do multi things. And this was probably in like 2013, 2014 that I walked into an office environment that had that sort of thing. Previously, it was always just like one single monitor, you're doing one thing at a time. But all of a sudden now we're doing that, and we have the tablet next to us and our iPhones, and we're doing a million different things at once. We have Slack open, we have email open, we're doing all these different things, and it really just is not productive. In Noise, the McCormick book, he t- talks about a study that measured that attempting to multitask and even doing so, people that feel that they're good at it, even those that do, their IQ will drop by 10 points while they're in the state of multitasking, which is super interesting. And like, what does 10 points even mean, right? But if you are under the influence of marijuana, generally speaking, your IQ drops by less than 10 points. So, I mean, I'm not going to advocate this and say that I would rather, you know, someone smoke weed before doing work or before multitasking. But if we're talking about actual IQ points, then the data is showing that, you know, one is actually better than the other. Ultimately, I would say you should try and stay sober when trying to work. So that's the first point. The second thing on the multitasking side, and this is from Deep Work, references a study that was done at the University of Minnesota where they had test subjects complete two different tasks. The first was a puzzle, and the second was HR-related tasks of going through resumes and looking for quality candidates, like a big stack of resumes and trying to figure out who the best candidates were. And there were specific tricks and themes in that stack of resumes that like made it pretty clear who the better candidates were. So the first set, we're told to complete the puzzle and then move on to the second task of the HR resume sorting. So that's not multitasking. And then the second group was instructed to start the puzzle, and then halfway through they were interrupted and then told to start the resume project. So even though they weren't technically doing both at the same time, but their mind was still fixed on the previous task that they weren't able to mentally complete. Not only was the second group worse at pulling out better resumes, but they had a much worse memory at recalling specific details of any of the resumes that they had viewed. And again, none of this is super surprising. We've heard all of this before, but it really just comes down to the fact that like, okay, well, all of us have bad habits. Like we all have too many notifications. We have too many noises and our desks are too cluttered and our phones are going off constantly. And we just need to practice better habits. I'm interested though, that you've said that you have never been a multitasker, but do you still fall victim to any of these things?
I think when I'm not feeling like doing work, I kind of lean on multitasking as a crutch to feel like I'm doing more work, if that makes sense. Like I'll have like, and I literally am looking at my desktop right now. I probably have at least 25 tabs open, and I will constantly toggle back and forth between 5 open tabs and like do a little bit of everything to feel like I'm doing a lot, when at the end of the day, I'm really not getting anything done. So I think this concept of being overwhelmed by, you know, social media, we have so much going on our phones, we have a desktop or two in addition to our laptops, we have so many devices at our disposal to launch all of these different projects onto, literally and like metaphorically, that I think it can be very easy to use that concept of multitasking as a way to get out of actually getting work done. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I definitely think that having all of these distractions is misleading. Like it makes us feel like we're more productive when at the end of the day, it's just undermining deep work.
And so it's great in theory to say this, but putting into practice is very challenging. I think the nature of the work that we do, like, I don't know if I could say that the agency world is optimal. It doesn't create great environments for deep work. And don't hold back here. Do you think that between the work that we do as an agency and also just like the culture of our team and our company, do you think, in your opinion, that we have the ability to encourage deep work in the way that it really should be done?
I think it's really interesting. And I think for people to do deep work, I think it really depends on each person's personality type and what they need to be productive. So it's difficult for me to say that, you know, walking into any agency or this one in particular, is it possible for deep work to be encouraged here? Like, I don't know, because I think deep work really changes depending on the person and what they need to set themselves up for success in terms of productivity. For me, like, I can't be around anyone who is having a conversation. Otherwise, I get distracted right away because I am by nature extremely social. I want to be a part of the conversation. If something's going on around me, I can't do work. So for me, like an open floor plan where people are socializing is very difficult if we're trying to get deep work accomplished. But not everyone's like that. For example, like I happen to do my best writing in coffee shops. I can get very, very deeply immersed in whatever I'm writing if there's like subtle like ambient noise around me, if the room is full of people. So like I think your setting and I think where you are and just like the circumstances around you determine deep work in a lot of ways, like the possibility for it. And I don't think everyone's like me. I think a lot of people thrive on an open floor plan setting where they have conversations going around. But is it possible? I think it's definitely possible. I think there are different ways you can facilitate deep work. It doesn't necessarily have to be reliant on your environment or the physical layout of an office space, but more of a mindset.
I would disagree. I don't think that many people thrive in that concept. I think it's just the trade-off for the sort of culture that you want to spend your time in. Like, even if you get your best work done in that in a coffee shop when you're in solitary confinement, essentially, I bet you wouldn't choose that. Like you've said on a previous podcast here that you thrive on the energy of being around other people and collaborating. So you wouldn't really choose that, even if it would result in better work. And that is something that I've been thinking about recently, because it's almost as if we have two sides of the spectrum here. We have this desire to be the sort of company and agency where it's a relaxed and fun environment where creativity can flourish. But on the other hand, we have a ton of work to do and we need to have this ability to tap into this deep work. And I think the question that is really impossible to answer, but it's like, are these two things mutually exclusive? And if so, like, how do you strike that balance? Do we have to put rules in place to say, like, between these hours and these hours are dedicated to deep work and then it's otherwise dedicated to creativity? Like, I don't really think so. It's almost as if it's like an unwritten code into your culture that everyone has to just sort of be in the same agreement for.
You know what I think is really interesting that just came to mind as we were having this conversation about the interplay between, like, you know, collaborating, being in the office and having those conversations, brainstorming together. It really does fuel creativity, but at the same time, you do need a space to get that deep work done. I think what we're seeing since COVID is that as companies are planning to reopen their office spaces, they're encouraging more of a flexible plan wherein if you have meetings and you have projects that you need to work on with the team, then you come into the office. Otherwise, you have the ability to work remote. I'd be curious to see if that kind of shifts the productivity level and improves it, which I think my hypothesis is it will, because that makes perfect sense to me.
I think a lot of people are almost doing it by accident, where they're embracing the hybrid model for a reason other than productivity and deep work. They're doing it because it'll save costs, it'll make their employees happier, or it's just safer because we're still in the middle of a pandemic. A lot of people have said, like, I don't really want to go back to the office 5 days a week. So a lot of employers are saying that they're not going to do that because they don't want to lose their employees or piss off their employees. And a lot of companies now, they're downsizing their office space. They're going to be moving to the more like, hey, we're going to rent a space for 3 days a week or 2 days a week, and that's going to save us a ton of money. I think you're really going to see that in the startup space. It's going to become like, this is a whole separate topic, but like venture capitalists and any company that wants to go public 5 years from now, if you have an office that's full-time 5 days a week, like no one's going to invest because that's not going to be best practice. So you're really going to see this trend happening. But I think that the fact that I agree that there's more productivity in this sort of flexible environment, and I think that is like an output of this new trend, and is not the reason why it's happening. Now, ultimately, it doesn't matter. Like, if you end up in that better space, then who cares how you got there? And I think that's where we land. We sort of, like, fell backwards into this, like, this hybrid model, and we were trying to figure out what was best, and then kind of decided, like, oh, actually, I think we're much more productive if we have, like, a somewhat flexible hybrid schedule. And now I think we're sort of doubling down on that, and we're trying to figure more of this stuff out. But I do think, though, that regardless of what you're going to do here, this balance between relaxed creativity, social energy, and then on the other side, solitude, deep work environment. That's the sort of thing that I think really needs to be embraced. If you're going to pull that off and do it well, it needs to be embraced by every single person in the organization. I know, in previous companies that I've worked for, the term of like, hey, this person like doesn't get it. You know what I mean? Like, if you come up to me and I have like big headphones on and I'm plugging away and you're gonna like ask me a stupid question, you just don't get it. I'm in the zone, man. Like, leave me alone. But most people at this point, at least that I work with, and I think we're blessed to have some pretty self-aware people here, that can understand that. And I think that's a culture that is very important to have if you're gonna start to pull this thing off.
My question to you, though, is how do you articulate that culture to your employees?
I really don't know. I think we've been lucky. It comes down to the kinds of people that you hire. We're very particular. We bring on high-level people and we just trust that they're going to be intelligent enough to figure it out. And I think they are. Knock on wood. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But yeah, it's tough. I don't really know how to enforce it, but I think that's something I can think about and see. Maybe that's a future podcast episode. But here's still the issue that it comes down to. Again, we can say all this stuff is great, but I still think that the agency or makeup is just not cohesive to even do that for multiple reasons. One, because like something is always going to go wrong and things are always going to go off the rails at any given moment. And the second part of it is agencies tend to attract creative people. They have a natural aversion to the structured environment that leads to deep work. You're the exception here. Everybody else on this team loves having a million tabs open on their computer at all times. And they love having a third monitor with like Slack and other things happening. Like, they're not bad people. They're just like, that's their environment. They're creative people. So if we try to implement structure and we try to promote this idea of deep work more, we're almost going against what has led us to be successful up until this point.
I would disagree with you. I don't think creative people inherently hate structure. And that's not necessarily what you're saying, but I think I can say that because I used to think that structure was evil. When I was meeting with my career coach, which I mentioned, I brought this problem to his attention. I was like, listen, like I'm a highly creative person. Like I don't like being told what to do. I don't like to have like very clear tasks that I need to get done. Like I like the freedom to experiment, to do what I want, to have that creative capability. And at the same time, like I don't like just having no plan. Like I had this like huge dichotomy where like while I wanted my creative freedom, like I also needed a little bit more guidance. And so I think creative people need to have like a broad structure in place, a broad process in place to get their work done. Otherwise, you just have creativity without execution. It's just like ideas. I think a lot of creative people would benefit from more of a general guiding, whether you call it structure, process, principles, tasks, I don't know. It doesn't have to be so black and white, but I do think that overall, most people would benefit.
I completely agree, and I guess I should have articulated this. Everyone likes some structure because it grounds you, but the problem is, as you get bigger and bigger, it's harder to maintain a structure that works for everybody. I'll give you an example of this. Looping in this topic and why it's been on the top of my mind so much recently is because we've come to a point where we understand that we need more structure now. And I'm in the middle of trying to figure out how we can implement new project management tools into everything that we do. And I'm terrified because, like, I do not want to implement something that is going to waste anyone's time, or I don't want to try and fit square pegs into round holes. We have a lot of people here with a lot of different personalities and habits, and I want to be able, like, up until this point, the lack of structure has been to our benefit because everyone has been able to figure out their own way to succeed. And when I meet with a lot of individual account managers and say, like, I'm always just like interested, like, hey, like, how do you structure your day? How do you choose what's priority? How do you keep up with all of your accounts and all the different things you have to do? And I'm always just like, I'm just genuinely interested. It's not like me trying to like micromanage or whatever, like, you would be so surprised at, like, the kinds of things that Ben does compared to Nahama or Ronnie or Erica. Like, everybody has different ways that they go about, and I just think that that's fascinating. But ultimately, you bring more and more people on, and you have to really bring some of that together and have more things that are cohesive throughout the entire organization. And my struggle right now is finding solutions that can work for everybody without completely losing that little bit of freedom to customize your day. And like the example, I guess, that I was gonna mention before I completely went off in a different direction there was when I came on board at Adventure Media, we were a very structured, believe it or not, company. It was myself and Isaac and Ari and Danny. And Ari and I were basically the only two account managers. And we managed a ton of accounts. And every single account had like a specific set of instructions that we had to follow. And I hated it. Like we had this big whiteboard at the old office that we would like sign a new client. Danny would write it up on the board. And then like as Ari and I would check off the boxes, we would like go up to the whiteboard and like scribble stuff down. And as part of it, we used Asana, which is a project management tool for all of our clients. And we would create this like template that we would use for every client. But like the reality of it is like every client's different. Every situation is unique. Sometimes these tasks aren't necessary. Sometimes you need a different set of tasks. And ultimately, as you bring on more and more clients and as you get a more diverse book of clients, all these things kind of go out the window and you're trying to force it into this structure that you have and it just ultimately doesn't work. So I ended up using Asana as my own little to-do list that worked really well for me and I really liked it. I had all of my accounts in there and I had recurring tasks that I did for myself, but ultimately like that, I tried showing Ari it a million times and it did not work for him. And when we started hiring more people and bringing them on board and I had to train them, I told them all about this great idea I had for managing my accounts. None of them liked it. Everyone tried it. It didn't work for anybody. And to the point where now, you know, 6 years later, I'm going to try to bring on a new project management tool. If I mention the word Asana to the rest of the team, they're going to stop listening to me immediately because they were so sick of hearing me preach about how great it was all those years ago. And the point that I'm coming back to with this is just trying to figure out like how can we come up with something that works for everybody. And I think the more structure you get, it's the opposite of what we ultimately need. Because as Isaac said on a previous episode, the question I posed to Isaac was, you know, what does it take just to be successful and all this other stuff? And part of his response was, you need to embrace a constant state of potential chaos. What I said a few minutes ago, that at any given point, anything could go wrong. And you just have to be okay with that. And if you live in a world and a work environment where there's so much structure and you come in and you have a, you know, it's Tuesday morning and here's the tasks I have to execute and here's my calendar and I'm going to leave the office at this time. Every time you get an email from a client that there's an urgent message, every time something doesn't go as planned, every time a meeting runs over or you have more time built in or whatever happens, all of a sudden you're crippled with anxiety because you've built this structure and this is the way things are supposed to go and now it's not and that's a nightmare. So what I think is super important, and this is again something that we've just kind of fallen backwards into, is the idea of frameworks. So we say it's kind of a loose structured guideline of saying, okay, well, this is how we onboard clients. This is the general framework of how we have our first few phone calls with clients. This is how we, you know, a framework for, like, we don't have a specific structure for the podcast. We have like a general guideline of like topics that we cover and the way we go about it, but we're kind of just figuring this out as we go. But what do you think about that whole idea, right? So like basically I'm arguing on the behalf of a balance and structure that sort of can work for everybody, but ultimately towing the line of too much structure that ultimately creates more anxiety.
I think it's really interesting. I think anything in an extreme never works. It has inherent negative outcomes, whether you're too structured or not structured enough. If you're on either end of the spectrum, it's bound to cripple you at the end of the day. So I think balance is really key with what you're trying to do. And balance is key with everything, like in every character trait, in every aspect of your life. Like it's very important to have balance. So I think if you give people marching orders, if you give people like very specific, like A, B, C, this is what you have to get done and count, like you're right. It doesn't really leave room for flexibility, and it can make adapting to challenges difficult if you have like an exact playbook of what you need to do. It can make having something that's outside of that playbook very scary, and it can make it that much harder. So I think what you're saying about frameworks is really interesting, because I think frameworks are very different than structured task lists, which is kind of what it seems like Asana was for you guys, which it's good to know the backstory there. Maybe we won't do Asana.
Not allowed to even evaluate Asana. So I apologize if anyone from the Asana organization is listening to this, but I'm sorry. I ruined this for all of us.
No, but I mean, it's interesting. I'm just thinking about it in the context of my own like day-to-day work and different side hustles that I'm a part of. And I think structure is more important for early hires and people who come onto the team at first, so that they can learn and acclimate to the organization. Like just thinking about my own projects that I work on, when I'm working with someone who has no experience, like it's much more beneficial to have a step-by-step process in place, because I don't have the time to walk somebody through what I need, A, B, C, D, all the way to Z. It's so much easier to just have something I can give to them, be like, do this. And then eventually they can learn and they can have that flexibility to make their own decisions once they get more of a feel for what they need to do. But I think real structure and organization is most important for early hires. And then once someone learns, I think structures can be lifted and frameworks can be more of the guiding principle. This is based on nothing, just my own experience and my own thoughts.
No, I think that's actually brilliant because honestly, I think in the past, I've made the mistake of too loose guidelines for new hires with training and onboarding. And we've recently changed the structure where I sort of pulled a few other team members in and said, hey, look, like, I think that I'm doing a bad job on creating a training schedule for new employees. Can you guys help me like create more structure here? And again, it wasn't like you just articulated something that I think I've been doing by accident over the last like couple months. But I think that makes a lot of sense. More structure for new hires, and then you get to a point where they can embrace the chaos, and that's where true creativity can be unlocked and all these other things once they get acclimated to the environment and the work. I think that's great. That's super helpful for me.
I think most people in their first job or in any job really would resonate with that feeling of like, hey, like I don't know what I'm doing. I want to do a good job. Like just tell me what to do and then I'll learn and I'll be the best employee I can be, and I can be able to handle the work so that I can grow and take on more challenges and advance in my career and help this organization.
I think that's great. The last thing I want to talk about, back to like focus and productivity, something I've been talking about constantly with the rest of the team is planning your day around what's referred to as red tasks and blue tasks. And this is something I honestly, I don't even remember the original source, but it was referenced in a Wall Street Journal article. So I have to find the original psychologist that wrote about this. But the idea is that a blue task is something that's very logical and analytical and has like a finite like start and end, whereas a red task is more emotional, it's more thoughtful, requires critical thinking, and it's sort of loose in terms of what needs to be accomplished. And I haven't met a single person who like doesn't like to-do lists and the gratification that comes. You don't like to-do lists? You're raising your hand. What? What? Wait. What? How? Like what? You don't like writing things down and then the gratification of checking things off? What is wrong with you?
It's not like I hate it. I just like really, I actually don't like it.
Don't like accomplishing things? Wait, this is wild. I really don't understand how this could be
Yeah, I don't like
possible.
it. I just don't.
So what's like, I don't even know the question that I have to ask you. What do you do? Like, what do you like? How do you, what does this mean?
I don't know what it means. This is probably something I should take to a therapist and get psychoanalyzed about, but I think, like, I don't know, maybe it stems from, like, I don't know, my high school. I went to a crazy high school. I just don't feel the need to get accomplishment from tasks. Like, that's not how I feel good at the end of the day.
So you, okay. All right. So let's hold that for a second. That's fascinating. Okay. So red task, blue task thing. A to-do list is very blue task oriented. So the example from the Wall Street Journal article was, if you need to renew your auto registration, you go to the DMV website, you fill out a couple of things. It's pretty, it's not mindless, but it's like sort of mindless. And then you hit submit and then it's done. And then you can cross it off your checklist and that's it. Whereas like a red task is something that's a little bit more ambiguous. So a good example of this is like yesterday I spent, I don't know, probably an hour and a half to 2 hours working on a report for a client of ours. It was the sort of thing that like, I had no idea. I knew I had to get it done. I knew I had to get it done and it could have taken me 10 minutes. It could have taken me 10 hours because I had to do these like API connections and it was kind of a pain. And I lost my work at one point, but that's like, there was really no definitive start and end to that. It was just like jumping in. I knew how to get it. I knew I sent something to the client. So that's like a red task. A red task might also be like, I need to go into an account and figure out what the heck is going on because we've had a different performance and I want to figure out what's going on and create a plan for what's going to be good in the future. Blue task would be, I need to schedule a client call. And so the psychologist that I really should find their name because this is terrible that I've been talking about their work so much and I don't even know who to reference here to give credit. But the idea is that you should fill your day with a balance of red tasks and blue tasks. And ideally, you would accomplish your red tasks earlier and try to have something complete and definitive before noon, like at some point in the morning. And blue tasks are interesting because you can fill them in. Like you sort of know how long these things are going to take. You know how long it's going to take you to schedule a call or to renew your auto registration. So if all of a sudden you find yourself with 15 minutes of free time, you're like, okay, like I can check off these two blue tasks. And that's how you can continue to feel productive and accomplished throughout the day. And honestly, I've been really thinking about this on a daily basis over the course of probably last month or so. And I have personally felt so much more accomplished and less burnt out than I have in recent memory. That doesn't mean I'm more productive. It's more of like an attitude and headspace thing where I'm like thinking like, okay, like I need to go do a red task now. So I'm going to try and tap into the deep work and I'm going to shut off my notifications and I'm going to put my headphones on and I'm not going to let anything else bother me because I need to like go through this reporting problem and solve it. But then if it's like, okay, I have blue tasks to do, okay, fine, I'll open my door, I'll be having a conversation with somebody else while I'm in the middle of doing something else. And I think kind of embracing that state has been super beneficial for me. It's something that I've been preaching to everybody. And I think that it really helps tie back into this concept of balancing the deep work, red task type of environment with your creative, loose, everything else that comes with that, your more relaxed environment where you can kind of just like churn out your blue tasks in the middle of it all.
How do you even go about changing that habit of starting to accomplish the red tasks? Because for me, it sounds so great in theory and I'm on board, but what you're talking about is really a habit. Like you need to get into the habit of accomplishing something that's in the red task bucket earlier on in the day. Like, are you driven by motivation, like the need for to be productive? Like, is it more of a mindset or is it something that you actually are implementing as a habit and an action?
I think it's something that I've been accidentally doing. If you go back to the early days, like the times where I was keeping that Asana checklist like crazy, my day was pretty structured where I would never schedule client phone calls before noon. And I would do as much of my account work as possible before that time. And a lot of times I would come in to the office very early to go to do it because I knew that once 12 o'clock hit, I was not going to be able to tap into that red task mentality. Now, I wasn't articulating it as such. I had no idea that existed, but But I knew once I have a client phone call or once I have a meeting with another team member, it's not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to be able to put the right amount of time into solving a complex problem for somebody. So I tried to structure my day like that. And I'm more of a fan of, like, I hate days where I have, like, you know, a half hour meeting at 9 and then another meeting at 10:30 and then another meeting at 1 and then 1:30 and then 3. Like, I like to cram all of my meetings into one half of the day, and I'm okay going rapid fire back to back to back. Again, because you know what that forces you to do? It forces you to have better habits about hard stops and planning for those meetings and making sure that you have an agenda and flow, and you're not just like, yeah, whatever, you guys have extra time? Yeah, that's fine. And now all of a sudden a half hour meeting becomes an hour. Gary Vaynerchuk uses this concept all the time where he talks about, you know, cut all your meetings in half, your meeting times in half, because if you have a 10 pound bag, you're going to find 10 pounds of shit to fill it with. And that's essentially what it comes down to. If you have an hour long meeting, you're going to find a way to fill it with an hour. So I like having my meetings crammed back to back to back so that I can unlock, whether it's the first half of the day or the second half of the day, to actually do real work. And I've always sort of been like that. And now I'm just trying to be more cognizant of it and plan for that. Going back to when we had Ari on the podcast and we talked about, you know, what has been so successful for him in his career growth and everything he's accomplished. He said the number one thing I do is I plan. Sunday night, I spend, you know, 45 minutes to an hour just going through and making sure that I have everything I need to do. Just not just setting up my calendar and my to-do list, but also just like getting into the mental state of all the things I need to accomplish that next day. So I try to plan ahead. I have my list of things I need to accomplish in a week, and I schedule my calendar around blue task, red task.
Do you think it would be beneficial to block off a certain part of the day and reserve that only for meetings? And reserve the other part of the day for deep work, or is that impossible to do, the client nature of our work?
That's something that we actually spoke about doing recently. A friend of mine works for a company that they're all remote right now, and there's people all over the world. And so they're only allowed to have meetings between 10 and 2 Eastern time. So like, he and a few friends, like at the start of the winter, just like rented a house in Park City, Utah, because they're big into snowboarding. He was living in Boston. He's like, well, it's a pandemic, I'm going to take advantage of this while I can. So he's now in a completely different time zone, and he's keeping those hours. Now, it's different, though, because it's easier to do that when you just work for a company. When you work for an agency, like, we have clients in Europe, we have clients on the West Coast, we have to have our internal meetings. So it's harder for us to keep that structure, but I would love to do that. I would love to have a certain time of the day. And we've thought about it, like maybe even if it's just Tuesdays and Thursdays or something like that, that would be excellent. We just haven't like pulled the trigger on that yet. But either way, none of this stuff works if you're not disciplined. I used to block off twice a week. I would take an hour and a half and say that I'm going to dedicate this to catching up my email inbox. And it was great. And it was great for maybe 6 months. And then I started like not taking it as seriously. And I would be like, no, you can schedule a meeting during that time. Like, it's fine. It's not that important. It's just like my internal stuff. Once you break that habit once, you'll never do that again. It's the same thing as like, I'm not a morning workout person. At a point in my life, I tried being a morning workout person where I would set an alarm and I would go to the gym before work. And then that one time that I like snoozed and skipped it, it was like, oh wow, sleeping is amazing. And I've never been back to the gym in the morning. So that's the same thing with any of these habits. If you have, hey, I want to block off time for meetings, or I want to block off time to do deep work, if you're not regimented and if you cheat even a little bit, it's never going to work for you in the long term. Anything else to add on any of these topics related to productivity or focus or deep work or chaos?
So much to say. I think we just like scratched the surface here. No, it's a fascinating topic, and I think it's very hard to implement structure, especially in a setting where chaos honestly produces better work. So I think we could really dive into this more, but yeah, it's been a good conversation.
We will circle back in a couple of months once we implement a little bit more structure, and we'll talk about all the mistakes that we made between now and then.
What's like one thing that you're going to start implementing that we can check back in on a few months from now?
Oh, God.
And say that we've done?
The first thing that I want to figure out is managing client requests. And that's the easiest thing. That's very task oriented. So that's going to be the easiest thing, I think, to implement with a new system. That's top of mind for me. And you're helping out with that. So you're very much being held accountable to this as well.
April or May, we'll circle back and see if we've got it done.
Excellent. I'm putting that on the calendar. Awesome. Thank you everyone for listening. Also check out Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation. It's a new book that came out in November about running profitable digital advertising campaigns on Facebook, Google, and other new automated platforms. It's a great book. Tells the story of Venture Media, and I'd love for you to get a copy. It's currently on sale on Amazon. Check it out. Thanks.